Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kalb. Today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Hildegard Staninger, who is the author of Global Brain Chip and Mesogens, Nanomachines for Ultimate Control of False Memories. Dr. Staninger has been involved for some time with the evaluation of, implantable materials within the human body that can do a number of different things, which we'll be discussing in the next hour. And there are ethical considerations, there are toxic burden considerations, there are even considerations where certain types of chips might increase the risk of cancer. And so these are all things that we'll be talking about. Welcome, Dr. Staninger. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Kalb. It is always a pleasure to be on your show, and I really enjoy sharing and being a guest on your show for the world to hear. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Would you tell the listening audience a little bit about your background and how you became involved in analyzing these devices and researching them?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm an industrial toxicologist. I've been at 38 years. How this came about, not meaning in reference to the global brain chip, but meaning the whole exposure of having individuals that have been either kidnapped and chipped, as I call it, meaning put a sensor into them for tracking, or an implant for clinical research or whatever it may be, started with the case of James Walbert, and that case then went before not only the court system, but also Representative James Guest of Missouri, where we had Dr. John Hall, myself, Melinda Kidder, and William J. Taylor, Melinda Kidder and Mr. Taylor are private investigators, and they found the signals that were coming from Mr. Walbert, and that brought me into assessing and working backwards, because that's what an industrial toxicologist does, works backwards in determining who made a product, what is it chemically composed of, etc. And then I evaluated a number of individuals that were exposed to different types of, I'm going to call it sensory technology, because we went beyond the very chip into self-assembling wireless sensors, and that brings us into medical telemetrics and wireless sensor body area networks. And what happened in November of 2011, which was based on the book, which is The Global Brain Chip and Mesogen, is basically a science book on how the chip was made, at the same time what was the technology in science and chemistry to identify the chemical analysis, thus determine what it was, okay? Mm-hmm. And that was done with Madame Kumanji. She was a world-famous Iru player, which is the one-string traditional ancient violin of China. And she also was a concert violinist, did up the whole music programs, bringing Chinese traditional music to the school system in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. She also, from her background, also brought over in 2008 American bands for the Summer Olympics of China. In other words, mm-hmm. I'm sharing this information, Dr. Kalb, not only with yourself and the audience, meaning this was a seasoned professional business person, not only in Chinese cultural, but also in American trends in music and that. She's well-respected in that community. And she was sitting at her desk. She went through some other things that brought it to a point, but she was sitting at her desk. She noticed a movement in the bushes, felt a burning sensation in her ear, and then within a short time afterwards, meaning several months, she started to get headaches, nausea, et cetera, this way, and then it was assessed that it was a possible brain tumor, and then she had it removed, and it was a benign meningioma. That was the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But when I received the specimen that was brought over by her private investigator, DiMatteo and Associates, Michael DiMatteo, the thing is that I sent it to my advanced materials lab, and they could not cut it with the scalpel. We were looking at chemical
really?
Composition, you know, what could form this, et cetera. But listening to her story, which is I had a burning sensation in my ear and movement in the bushes, meaning someone could have been there with what we found later on, a microwave gun. And why this is because the chemical composition was harder than a rock. We had to use a diamond cutter to cut through it, got through, and I use Raman analysis in the directions that I take because I did not want to destroy the specimen. An EDS, energy dispersion, to look at chemical composition from elemental composition. The thing is, though, it had hydrocalcium palpitate on the outside and on the inside, styrene, like, styrofoam cup, but it was hard. The thing is, in the formulation of nanotechnology for new sensors that are used in the integration of wireless transmission, they have equal amounts of these two powders. You can add other things and other types of technology, but equal amount, and you have to hit it with a microwave so that it will make the styrene go in the center and the calcium, hypercalcium palpitate on the outside. So that's what was discovered, and then the other metals that were associated with it and other chemical composition, which was very important at the time. You've got to remember this is in 2011, going into analysis in 2012, meaning it was put in there, but by the time you get the results back and everything, it takes 4 to 6 weeks. And the thing is that with it, we found other compounds. That's why I love Raman. I worked 10 years with Dr. Schulte at Creo Lab at the University of Central Florida for years. And it does not destroy it. Yes, it's a laser, but at the same time, you can determine the molecular structure, the bond angles, and that's how it gives birth to the mesogens, which are polymers and other components that are layered, just like if I put my one hand down and my other hand on top, so that it's a building block, it's a foundation.
And so how did these materials get in her?
Well, what happened is that through the microwave technology that was used, a gun, it could be I'm using this term, meaning it was never determined what type was done, but, you know, there's like the Silent Guardian or any of these that are developed for, like electronic weapons, non-kill weapons type thing for crowd control, et cetera. The thing is, you can have the little, you could have already been sprinkled with the material, meaning as a nano dust or a nano CMOS, which was a liquid viral crystals, or it could be on the unit itself and then pointed at and sent into you.
Through the ear?
Oh, through the ear, yes. In the book, we did analysis. She had ear wash done at that time, just plain warm water. Her physicians and surgeons were very cooperative to what she wanted to determine. And the thing is that the chemical composition of what came out of the ear in polymerization, meaning the styrene and the calcium palpitate, matched the chemicals that were in benign mesogen, which was really a brain chip. And it was circular.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, where one end is bigger than the other end, or any of that in development. And that
this self-assembled in the brain then.
Right. It was delivered as, I'm going to call it liquid viral crystals, particulates. Mm-hmm. Particulates, mm-hmm. like, I'll give you an example. If I was to take a hole puncher, like we punch out paper, that would be a, you know, the piece of little circular paper would be two-dimensional. But if I put a crystal on it, I put another mm-hmm. particulate, or that could be the particulate, that allows it to grow. When nanomaterials are kept cold or in cold conditions, they don't mm-hmm. expand too much in these types of technologies that we're talking about. And what happens is when it gets warmed up to body temperature, it mm-hmm. expands, or it takes water or oxygen out of your body. And some of the other ones that are interfaced, and not necessarily this one, but with DNA or DNA coding, then it will take certain nutrients out, like amino acids, to self-assemble. That's what mm-hmm. the term self-assemble means. It's using the terrain's nutrients or building blocks that are there.
Hmm. So we don't really know how the materials got there, but we know that they were activated by the microwave.
Correct. She had been, I'm going to say, compromised in that, had in her business intrusion of computer. She had a suspect which was termed the China spy, and a lot of things happened, and that was under investigation. And then when mm-hmm. she, which was sad, when she made a complaint to the Chinese government, they ended up detaining her and putting her through a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that the older technology, well, let's talk a little bit about the RFID chip. That's a mm-hmm. pretty big chip. It's the size of a grain of rice. They're kind of glass and wiring and kind of orangish glass with, and they break, you know, so that's a problem.
Right, and they have the battery within them. They have the battery within them.
Right, but it's pretty gross technology. I mean, they're pretty big. They're injected usually via a needle. And the data with in the animal data anyway is that they can form sarcomas around them, you know, which is typical of any electromagnetic disturbance. It lowers the energy of the tissue around it and can increase the risk of cancer. So people chip their dogs, people chip their children. You can locate them with GPS, and I guess you can store your health records on them. And there was an idea that they were going to try to chip everybody in the country at one point. There was probably a plan for that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. And then also in reference to now, with the newer materials, it can be sprayed. It can be atomized. Mm-hmm. It can be placed into medications, you know, the RF sensor now, because mm-hmm. a lot of the TVs were changed for a special device to put on if you didn't have cable TV, and so that you could have direct reading of your medication as mm-hmm. the TV would pick, not the TV, but because it's wireless and it's also got fiber optic, it can pick up the signal and then mm-hmm. it can be monitored. And this is remote monitoring or a hospital, whatever it may be that mm-hmm. is integrating. And it's important to know that under medical clinical trials or medical auspices, they're supposed to be transmitting the signal under what they call medical radio, which is mm-hmm. a standard frequency between the range of 2390 to 2400 and 2360 mm-hmm. to 2390. And in mm-hmm. that, the company who makes the chip, the equipment to read it, the right. interface of the computer, satellite, whatever it may be, that whole usage is supposed to be registered over Enterprise Wireless Alliance, which was assigned by the FCC to monitor and to help get these companies and everyone in compliance. But as of last week, which they were supposed to be registered, you know, in the middle, during the summer, like in June, no one's registered over there. And so there's a lot of still using under the auspices that it's industrial, scientific, or medical equipment that's under research and development, but it really isn't because it's being used, and I've assessed it or sent it to the appropriate authorities to do further enforcement investigations, you know?
So we have the RFID chip, which, like I said, was used for GPS, locating animals, lost children, having data, being able to be put on it. You put your health records on it and then just take your chip, which is in your arm or hand, and just wave it, and that data would be available. So, but that's like, that's really older technology. The technology that you're talking about is much different.
Oh,
and it
totally
does many more different things.
Totally different. We went with Madam Q with you know, the global brain chip, but then at the same time now the technology is there is polymers that is, you know, like skin armor that can be taken in a pill, interface between your under your skin and to the peripheral nervous system, so it puts a coating and the circuitry unfolds. That's called invisible circuits. And you can, it's all underneath. And the thing is that it's got little tiny quantum dots, or what they would call now microcubes, because some companies are getting away from the term nano. It's just a category. And the thing is that in those types of technologies, that's a whole interface for biometrics or monitoring physiologically or anything of the body to a quantum computer. And some of the hospitals and universities now have that ability.
Well, these things are so small. Most of these things are so small. I mean, we're removing things now that are, I'd say, less than a quarter of a millimeter large. You can hardly see them with loops. I mean,
they're
I know they're there because
they,
when my headlight hits them, they flicker, you know. So I take them out, and then there are things there. But this stuff is getting smaller and smaller, and there is evidence in some of the people that you've sent that for evaluation here that that some of the stuff is not able to be removed because it is really, really tiny.
Right, and the trend from those super tiny CMOS sensors or any category you want to put it in, it is designed now to integrate into the biological system. And that's what you and I have been saying is very hard to remove.
Right, yeah, or identify even.
Correct.
Except maybe with advanced, you know, techniques looking for certain materials, you know, that you look for the silicone and the arsenic and the, you know, the various things that shouldn't be in the body, the toxins.
Right, and at the same time, acrylonitrile, I testified in the acrylonitrile trials years ago with Uniroyal and that. And the thing is, meaning some of these compounds that are being used in making, I'm going to say, nano delivery systems or any of this are highly carcinogenic. You know, like acrylonitrile caused testicular cancer in males, cancer in breast cancer and that, and brain cancer. The styrene that we found in the brain chip turnaround, it is known to break down to vinyl chloride, and vinyl chloride is known to cause brain tumors.
Right.
So what
well,
what I'm saying
brain
is,
tumor.
What I'm saying is, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand knows in health and safety in particle and dispersion, and when you have a body, any of us humans, would you have a 1 degree change in temperature? It can go from into the meninges and into the brain. It can be absorbed through the nasal cavity. It's there's a lot availability to establish the body's terrain and the interface of it for whatever, like using it as getting the information, putting it into a cloud network of research, research activities or investment properties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of proving that the technology works.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier the chip, you know, the mm-hmm. very chip, the RFID sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the chips are smaller, but these chips that even you sent me in removing or anything, they can also, if they're designed, they can also absorb megabytes of information and transfer it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's designed like the DNA thiophene chip or any of these other types that are out there. There's a lot, as you and I well know.
Yeah. Well, one thing that is interesting, that many of the chips have GPS locator abilities, and as such, then the individuals can be targeted with satellite frequencies. And some of the satellite frequencies are interesting. They can cause extreme anxiety. They can cause pain. They can cause all sorts of very interesting effects. And all they need to do in order to deliver those is know your location.
Correct, correct. And when they're using laser or the integration, you know, in a what they call a multiplex system, in that situation, that it's like, okay, you have the little chip, but then you can do it in hierarchy of its design, so it makes like above space where there's no chip, but that's mm-hmm. how they send the signal and everything, just like you're describing, and it can be done on a different carrier wave. We may measure a frequency in RF at 2.86, being the frequency that may be measured, maybe 2399, just using that as an example, versus someone may use 8 kilohertz to 50 gigahertz and get a whole other set of numbers or one single number. There, what I'm trying to say is there's multi-channel systems that allow for a frequency to go at the higher range, like the terahertz, like the lasers that you're talking about, Dr. Cobb.
Mm-hmm. So in the book, you talk about smart dust. I guess this would be the ultimate small chip.
Well, dust itself is like the delivery. When they add mm-hmm. the CMOS or the metal component, the particle component to it,
mm-hmm.
that is the chip. That's what they call a tiny nano CMOS chip.
Mm-hmm.
Old name used to be crystal moat, because the moat mm-hmm. was the chip, sensor
mm-hmm.
type. Then the other is that they moved it to the term liquid viral crystals, because you could put the moat in that. In other
mm-hmm.
words, you can put that whole material in a liquid glass of water and have no effect, but if they send the frequency to it, it allows it to self-assemble in the body and do whatever it was designed to do. And it's not to be scary or hypothetical or anything like that, meaning this is the technology that is available and
mm-hmm.
out there in the marketplace or the commercialization.
Right. And basically, it seems that the programs that are out there are probably designed for particular purposes, like what you and I have talked about, Super Soldier mm-hmm. program before.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that the chips are placed in a certain pattern. There's certain things that they have, GPS locators, radar detectors, chips that will raise the blood pressure, voice to skull.
Right, and even lenses or chips within the eye, so
mm-hmm.
that it can interface and determine its not only just coordinates, but what is the terrain? You know, am I in an office? What am I in? How many distance
mm-hmm.
to the door, et cetera, this way?
So it seems that, you know, the research that's being done is probably within certain programs. The problem is that sometimes the chips have been stolen, allegedly. We don't know for sure, but it seems that they were stolen and put in people without their permission. Some of the programs may have people in them that didn't give consent for these programs. So this is the problem. The problem is that we know that the technology is being used without permission, without consent. And like industry, chips its whistleblowers, that kind of thing. And I think that, you know, the public is not aware of this at all. Very few people know about this. And when you tell them that there's, you know, many people are in total disbelief that this would exist.
Right, and they should look at, meaning recently I got a copy of a new law that was, you know, which affects all of us or any child we have, which is H.R. The 114th Congress Second Session, H.R. 4919 bill, which was done and passed April 12, 2016, that basically says that it will be okay to chip people that have Alzheimer's, mental health problems, autism, et cetera, because what happens if they get lost? Many times,
right, yeah. Yeah,
it's
true.
A thought that it's going to benefit, but when you really look at it, it's like, whoa, that's a heavy door to open.
Well, the other thing is, I don't see any studies showing that these chips are safe.
No,
what
haven't.
What studies are there that these chips aren't associated with cancer? We see that the first generation stuff is associated with cancer. What makes us sure that other things are not problematic?
Right, and we have to look at it, too, not only from the problematic, but also that many of the newer chips or the delivery systems, even using the DNA, is looking at using nano delivery systems for genetic diseases treatment. What is that going to trigger in relationship to unfolding different proteins and also the enzymes that are associated that may start a whole other different disease pattern?
Right.
We don't know the answers.
True.
That's it.
Well, tell us a little bit about some of the materials that you find, some of the toxic materials that you've found within some of these targeted individuals that have had this happen without their permission.
I found in these situations, we found radioactive fallout, which is in particular with the coating of these materials, they use vanadium, uranium, cobalt. When you have a hip replacement, especially the recall ones that were leaking, they were leaking chromate, cobalt, and thorium. So there is quite a difference. The other thing is, because the material is smaller in size, it may not have the same chemical characteristics as color or composition as, say, gold. When it comes out in the fibers and everything, it's red. So with arsenic, the individuals that are exposed, they have chronic levels of arsenic and the symptoms of arsenic toxicity. And what is sad about arsenic is that when it accumulates in the skin and you go outside, you have a higher incident of skin cancer or metastasization of skin cancer. The others, as I said, the acrylonitrile, the polymers, high-density polyethylene, ethylene glycol, these type. What I've also found is that in tissues, the carbon, which is associated as graphite, just like graphite from your pencil that they're used to make graphite nanotubes, this accumulates into the tissue or into the cells themselves. So there is a blackness, but when you have a chemical that goes into the cell loses function of, what do you call it, respiration, detoxification of the cell, the absorption of nutrients, you know, meaning its vitamin composition. The other thing is, I found also when they've had the analysis of a specimen or that, not necessarily they had the virus, but the virus particle was used to make the shape of the sensor, so the sensor would self-assemble into that shape. Example, like a hexagon, a triangle, etc. And there are new sensors that are being used to monitor pathogens, or if there was a biological threat in a community or anything, that, say, a plane could come, spray these little sensors, and they could be direct reading or reading, you know, through this wireless technology and exposed. But some of them still have the active DNA or how it's composed. I had an individual that had an 800 level on A and B 1 through 6 coxsackie virus, did not have any symptoms or blisters of foot and mouth disease, but had high hexosdiamase and measles, which we found out that a sensor was made with a coating of those pathogens, and the measles to be the measles was the control to monitor that that delivered the pathogen.
The same, yeah.
So, I mean, they're really, they're made with a purpose, whatever the purpose is, you know. And there is a race in industry, no matter what area of industry is, but for a direct reading instrument that can monitor anything or everything. Because, you know, for exposures or anything, that would be the ideal, you know, tool. But do we give them a sensor so that we can read it, or, you know, or is it really a direct reading from the person's, I want to say, touch the skin, saliva, hair, whatever it may be in the field? By the field, I mean if someone passed out on the street or something, they needed to test them, you know, or in war.
So a lot of these things seem to be being developed to be used on an area, like a battlefield, a city, as you say, aerosolized, dropped from the plane, and then the sensors and smart dust and other things enter the people and maybe animals too, and then information is transmitted back to a central location via these frequencies.
Correct, or a partnering, whether it's collegiate or industrial or whatever it may be, or a hospital association or any of that. It's important to know that not only is it gathering data about that individual person, physiological, how they get frightened, what's their fear factor or anything, but it's also gathering the collective, I'm going to say the collective body of those type of individuals that are, I'm going to call it chipped, have the sensor in them, and comparing it to a mass population or anything. And that's how they use the new, the more, I'm going to say, sensory networks that's in the system, the more rationale you have into the quantum computer, into the download of the cloud network. And I want to also share, when we did the brain chip, even a body burns at 900, 1,000 degrees. We burned it at above 1,100 degrees Celsius and couldn't get it to burn. It only turned into a green powder. So what I'm saying to you is, and to the audience, is some of these materials are made out of thermoplastics or polymers that, you know, we use thermoplastics and coatings on shuttles and rockets so that the nose cone or the missile doesn't burn up in space.
Right. So these are very advanced materials.
very advanced, and due to their history, able to integrate because of what it's done. And the thing is that in each one of these materials, there was in 2003, 2004, there was a great press release from Japan on the Hitachi chip that was, you know, a nano chip. It was a black speck called like that, smaller than a grain of pepper. But it had an antenna in it, too. So it could interface with sending and receiving as whatever it was designed to do. But that's right. How small, just as you stated earlier, it's extremely small. And from the mesogen side, being like put one hand down, that's your polymer coating of, say, polyurethane. But then I put the little black specks, which is another antenna sensor, and I coated it with that. So I have all like little black pepper. And then another layer. One can do it. Multiples are dispersed through the body and also in the environment. This same type of technology, crystal motes or anything, they use in monitoring under geoengineering, the weather and earthquakes, et cetera.
Yeah, we've seen the antenna. I've taken that out of.
Yeah, that's a total. What you've seen is that antenna, whether it's injectable antenna or absorbed, that's a different type of antenna I'm talking about. Yeah,
okay.
If I took a little, if I took a ballpoint pen and I made a dot, that would be the chip. Out of that is an antenna. It looks like a little crystal wire or a braided wire.
Okay, so it's Microsoft.
Because that's allowed to grow, too, versus what you've seen is, I'm going to call it a new advanced antenna, like a stentroid, which is like a stent, but it also, in these materials can be injected, by injected not only being a device, but meaning as a polymer that is designed to harden in the body and have particulate in it, particles that are the sensors.
So you suspect that the antenna that I'm seeing were injected then?
They can be, because you and I discussed, because they decompose with heat, and that they melt very fast once they're out of the terrain. So the question I have in my mind is, if I put a wire in, which they could, but maybe they break down. What you and I have had, not difficulty, but we work very well in determining how it's designed, what's the materials and everything.
Yeah,
because
well,
each
you know,
one
the
had
human
different
body
factors.
Is 98 degrees, so it's curious to me that these things would dissolve just in temperatures in the summer.
No, I think heat was put to them, you know, whether it was through packaging or, you know, what I'm saying is to come. And the original designs, because this was the stentroid, there was a press release done by DARPA where they're funding that research so that this was under safety of life, meaning if you had a hip replacement, a head injury, meaning head injury where you're bedridden or anything, you could not move, or you had terminal cancer or Alzheimer's, they would use these materials, these antennas, as we call it, the stentroids, to have it connected to a safety of life program. The safety of life program is designed so that they can use drones or planes to monitor a community of whoever has this in them to make sure they're alive, because many people are found that have a stroke or anything that may have died in their home, and they may have an animal that has the same type of chip to see if there's movement in the home. But all of it's supposed to be done with consent and knowledge, what you and I have experienced is our clientele and your patients have not given their permission.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you know any subjects that have given consent?
No. And the early on thing, meaning after 9/11, the thing is that with that, there was many laws that were passed that if it was a company or university or that was funded for special projects, and I'm using that term loosely, special projects, to help protect the public, they didn't need consent. And I feel that a lot of this has been swept under that type of situation. In addition to regular, because we have also clients that go into hospitals that the hospital or the physician may be involved in some research or extra funding or something, and the next thing we know that the patient or the client has a chip in them where they didn't have it before, you know, they went in for surgery or went in for a procedure.
Yeah, and, you know, the problem is that the symptoms are pretty strange. The voice to skull, of course, often gets one locked up in a mental institute.
Mm-hmm.
Just the sensations are so strange that doctors that don't understand these chips exist suspect that the patient isn't, you know, is mentally ill, or at least a hypochondriac or something like that. So it's very, very difficult because this has been completely, I guess, as you said, swept under the rug so that it's almost intentional that people don't know about this and that the victims aren't able to get help, not just from the medical profession, but from law enforcement.
Right, help and also a help in identifying it, you know, even from the law enforcement of monitoring it, you know, meaning picking up a signal. It should be if you have a professional that gave you the signals and you were able to identify it under good laboratory practice or standard operating procedures or that of the equipment, there should be somebody in the regulatory areas of law enforcement or anything that is able to take that data and contact and know who's doing it for the simple reason that these numbers, example, 2399.672, that number is registered to a license, registered to possibly a project because of the point 672. There's a 999 possibilities between the next number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's of interest is that it really is specific once the frequencies are identified.
Right. And it's not hard to do, but it's like this. I had a situation where we did the investigation, et cetera, identified three individuals that had the same number. It was under a safety of life program and without their consent or anything. And it was forwarded over to EWA. They said that they did not have anyone registered there. They contacted Wireless Telephone Communication Bureau, and then they told them to take it to SEC enforcement investigations. They put it over there. I sent all the data. Enforcement comes back and says that the people that have the license, the licensee, have not complained of interference. So they're backing off. They're not investigating. But they're not the ones that are complaining. It's the person that's receiving the signal, which is our clientele.
Right.
And the bottom line is, how did they get it? Because this is this type of program.
Right.
So it's like you said earlier, or I have said, it's just that there's people that take their job serious and are supposed to help the public when they've got the right information that even the person that's the regulatory official or anything can use to determine what is the facts and enforce what they're supposed to do.
Right. Well, the
but
facts
I found
are
out in this, excuse me, that even the FCC is a privately owned company.
Right.
I mm-hmm. didn't know that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, so is the Federal Reserve, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're probably owned by the same
yeah,
family.
Yeah, it's like, it's a long time, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that people need to be aware that whistleblowers are being chipped and tortured by companies. We won't mention on air what the companies are, but they're big companies, and they're companies that should know better. I don't understand why they would even think about doing this to their whistleblowers, but I have personally run into some people in my practice as patients who were whistleblowers at local institutions and experienced not chipping but gang stalking and other things to intimidate them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really a shame that powerful companies and institutions engage in this kind of illegal behavior.
Correct. And the thing is, which is ironic, is as things are advancing, what recently here in the California area, on the news, there was a nurse that got killed, and there, you know, an investigation, and then they arrested somebody. But it was her family members that went to the surveillance tape, went to use all these technologies, and determine what was going on. Okay,
mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, with the technologies that are out there, people can see the obvious, and it's where these industries or anything, you can't be an ostrich anymore or intimidate, because the veils are gone and people are aware.
Yeah. Well, I fear that they still think that they can get away with it.
Well,
and,
it's like some industries have. I'm going to call it nanotechnology, in that it's mm-hmm. like you can't smell it, you can't taste it or anything, but you could spray it and, you know, it's gone, but the building's still there. You know, that's always been in concern of maintaining the environment and maintaining the structural. But if you have people out of the equation, you don't have a problem, too.
Right. Well, this is the age that we're living in when all of this is coming to light. So hopefully the people making these decisions at institutional levels will understand that they may someday be held personally accountable for the decisions they're making.
Yes, the judgment day on Kingdom of Man and above is coming shortly, I think, for all of them that are connected and don't have a conscious, because this is also too, and I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist or anything like that. I ran the other way when I heard they're still using electric shock, you know. But the thing is that some individuals just look at it as money and greed or whatever. They don't. It's like the sacrifice of their consciousness. They don't even consider the ethical values of it.
Mm-mm. Well, most of the people, you know, I do communicate with the handlers through the people
mm-hmm.
on a regular basis. So I have talked to many handlers, and most handlers did it for the money. They didn't consider any of the consequences. One of the handlers knew about muscle testing. He was a psychologist, so I asked him, well, did you muscle test before you took this job? And he said, no. And so I said, well, you might want to, because what I'm muscle testing is that they'll not only kill me, they'll kill the patient if I do the surgery. So what do you think they'll do to you?
Yeah, because
he didn't have too much to say about that. You know, like, whoops.
Yeah.
Who did I just hire up to work for? You know.
Yeah, but they don't realize that. I don't think they don't give it any thought.
They don't.
You know?
Well, it is greed. But honestly, there are very dark parts of our society that seem to be involved in this, that that hopefully won't be around too much longer if the information we have is correct, that they may not survive certain things that are coming shortly. Mm-hmm. And if that's true, then we can help these people, all of these people, rather than just some of them.
Right, right. And neither you or I are selective of who comes or doesn't come. It's just that, you know, the first one in line is the first one that gets, you know, as we're going mm-hmm. through this process, because it's a lot of work on everyone's part, and even the client in documenting and putting it together, because you really don't know until you start getting analysis and results and everything, mm-hmm. and then it starts triggering their own memory, the client's memory, to remember what happened or what was
right.
the incident.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very, very subtle sometimes, too. And I wanted to... Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to say, I don't think there's any book out like this, Global Brain Chip and Mesogens. I mean... I assume that nobody has researched this area and published that.
No. To my knowledge, they haven't. My publisher, Zulon, said that it was the first of its kind.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I wrote it, based on the original papers I did, mm-hmm. is so that fellow scientists, fellow engineers, physicians, or anyone, even students that are going and wanting to become a chemist or anything, that when you're looking for an unknown, you have to use many tools at your disposal to find it. And yes, that right. can be very costly, and that for a client, but at the same time, you have the results and the answers, so that...
Right. Right.
You don't. You learn from it, and that's what the goal too of this book, because it's in the category of science, chemistry, and toxicology,
mm-hmm.
so that you may learn how to make mesogens in college because you're taking nanotechnology or you're taking molecular biology and learning to become a electrical engineer. But the thing is that there is many consequences, and at the same time, what is the intent of whatever you're making, too?
Right.
Because
yeah.
it has many properties. And what I love about EDS and scanning electron microscope, I remember when it first came out, it was a big deal when I was in college. And the thing is that with Raman, what I like is you don't destroy the specimen. And that's very mm-hmm. good for future forensic work for other disciplines, because mm-hmm. you need what was the specimen, what was the device.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you need to keep it intact.
Yeah, because right. a lot of times you have to dissolve it, you have to extract it, et cetera, and then you don't have the specimen. And that's
right.
why the lab does good laboratory practices, et cetera, log in, chain of custody, et cetera,
right.
this way, so that you can validate. Because I guarantee you there's not too many chemists or other scientists that are going to make up this stuff or destroy
mm-hmm.
it, because the whole thing is, it's out there, and it is happening.
Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. Thank you very much. I'm with Integrative Health Systems in Los Angeles, California. Our phone number is 323-466-2599. And the Global Brain Chip and Mesogen book is available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and Zulon Press. And I greatly appreciate you giving me the opportunity, Dr. Cobb, to share my thoughts and beliefs and scientific investigation with your audience and yourself. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's been a great interview. We've been interviewing Dr. Hildegard Staniger on her new book, Global Brain Chip and Mesogens, and introducing the audience to the concept of chipping without consent. And so the next time you hear of people hearing voices, don't automatically assume they have schizophrenia. I was talking to a psychiatric nurse today who felt that these, at least half of the people she was seeing in the mental institution might have been chipped rather than truly psychiatric. Anyway, join us again next week. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.